Hello, everyone. I'm John Melke, and this is Parkside Today. It's a pleasure to be joined by Tammy Myers, who is president of Mrs. Myers Reading Room. So get out a book, and we're going to... No, don't read while we're, listening to the show. We'll have to listen to the show. Tammy, welcome to Parkside Today.
Thank you, John. Thank you for having me today.
How does Mrs. Myers Reading Room get started? How does it come to be?
I'm a speech pathologist by profession. And one of the techniques that I use to teach children how to speak is through reading. And over the years, I have perfected this technique that uses auditory, visual, and kinesthetic approaches. So children are taught to use their eyes, their ears, and their bodies equally to learn to read. And not only do they learn to read, then they learn to enjoy learning.
Yeah. Now the eyes and the ears, that I can kind of figure. Where does the body come in terms of reading?
Oh, so much fun. We have a lot of games that we play that require physical movement.
Okay.
And my team is spectacular. We have very specific games that we do play with certain concepts that we're teaching. Mm-hmm. For example, if we're teaching syllables, then we have a post-it note game where the children run from one side of the room to the other and match post-it notes with different syllables to make accurate words. We don't allow make-believe words. They have to be real words. And so it can be a challenge. And that's a little further in the program with readers that are actually reading, you know, at a syllable level.
Mm-hmm.
We have those similar type games like shooting a basketball in a basketball hoop or playing limbo, hopscotch.
Mm-hmm.
We have multiple games that we play physically while the children are learning the skill of the day.
Interesting. What when someone is thinking about bringing their child, and I'm assuming the majority of your clients who you're teaching to read are younger children, correct assumption?
If you look at our demographic, our curriculum is based on teaching children ages 3 to 12.
Okay.
We do have tutoring programs for students that are over 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And that 3, 4, 5-year-old age range, we teach kindergarten readiness, pre-literacy skills, so children are learning ready when they enter school.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, 5, 6, 7, they go into our novel program. And that goes up to 12 years old. And that's actually reading comprehension, and writing.
Oh, okay. And what are, when a family member, mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, aunt, uncle, whatever it might be, is interested in finding out more about Mrs. Myers Reading Room, are there kind of some of the same questions that they may have? Or is it, or are there concerns or issues? Or is kind of like each student a little bit unique in what their needs might be, or what maybe a family member is trying to help them achieve?
You know, John, that's a great question. I would say, for the most part, all of the parent questions seem to be a little bit different because every child's situation is unique.
Mm-hmm.
But I would put them into categories. So we have the students that struggle with homework at home, and it interferes with the parent-child relationship, you know, because we've had children that cry every night during homework, and they have since first grade, and now they're in third grade that come in.
Wow.
And then we have children that are pretty much oblivious. They don't really realize there's a problem. They don't understand the concept of a report card having a bad grade. They just kind of have floated through life. And the parents understand that's an issue, but the student's not really getting it yet. And then we have the students that are behaviorally acting out or inappropriate. A lot of times you'll see avoidance behaviors when children are challenged to learn something that's difficult for them to learn. And they do things like not do their homework or don't tell their parents they have homework.
Yeah.
Or maybe lie and tell their parents that they already did their homework.
Gee, I wonder, I don't think I ever...
Or their dog ate their homework.
I was just thinking, that hit a little too close to home. It was a little bit too close. But, so, you know,
but. Well, you know, we have all felt some frustration in education. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're a person that has gone through an education system, it has never been easy for any one of us. We're all human. Mm-hmm. So we have to overcome those obstacles. The children that we work with are running into the obstacles, and they don't know how to overcome them.
Mm.
And so we help them find ways to learn that fit the way they think.
Mm.
And while they're learning, then they figure out that they start to get curious about learning. So mm-hmm. now they're starting to get curious about the things that they enjoy. And nowadays, most children, they either enjoy video games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so
yeah.
a lot of the stories are around video game characters.
Yeah.
Or superheroes.
Okay.
Or sports.
Yeah.
And the majority of the students we serve are boys. I'm not really sure why. We do have girls mm-hmm. as well, but I would say the majority are boys. They struggle with the way our education teaches reading right now.
Interesting.
And boys like the activity. They're really attracted to learning through the kinesthetic movements and the games that we play mm-hmm. and equally weighted with the visual and the auditory components.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as a young person, and it probably still is carried forward today, I was always interested in sports. Mm-hmm. And it was much easier for me. I enjoyed opening up the sports page of the newspaper as a young person. I can remember, you know, the paper come to the house and I wanted to look at the sports page. And that was probably where I did the majority of my reading. Was if there was a book that was connected to a sport, I was much more interested in reading that book than if someone said, here's a book on mm-hmm. pick out something else.
Mm, exactly.
And it was that for me, it was the sports connection. What do you see a difference? In, you know, they talk about, oh, nobody knows how to write anymore. You know, they're all, where the younger people are texting and they don't know how to put a sentence together. And is reading part of that equation as well? Where do you see, like, maybe it's harder for people to read or are they still reading more? Maybe they're just not writing things out in complete sentences and doing things the way they may have done years ago.
Well, You bring up an interesting point. One of the reasons that we also work on writing as well as reading with our students is because the students are, we believe that we can teach students to read, right? Mm-hmm. But that doesn't guarantee they're going to be good writers.
Mm.
But if a student is a good writer, you can pretty much guarantee they're also going to be a good reader.
Mm-hmm.
So we spend at least half of our time with each student working on the written components.
Wow.
And we do it through a high interest component. So they get to choose the topic and we infuse that room with vocabulary and ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And then they demonstrate whatever skill we're working on that week in their writing. And that's their goal. So they get to choose the topic and then they also get to illustrate what they're writing about. Hmm. And over the course of the program, it becomes this wonderful book that we publish for them. So at
wow.
the end of their class, they get to take home a book that they are the author and the illustrator.
Mm-hmm.
So I do want to back up a second. I want to give you an interesting statistic. There was a study out of, I think it was the University of Madison. And this was several years ago. And they said that 70% of college freshmen, so students entering college,
mm-hmm.
70% were not reading at a college level.
Wow.
At a college-ready level.
Right, right.
Which is very interesting. So you're talking about only those students that actually are going to college. What about the students that are going to technical school or not, yeah. no college at all?
Right.
You know, what level are they reading?
Yeah.
In our public schools today, a little over 60% of the students aren't reading at grade level.
Hmm.
So, you know, what are we doing to catch that up? I mean, I love Mrs. Meyer's Reading Room. Don't get me wrong. We have a lot of fun, and we have seen success after success. But we're definitely not the be-all, end-all to this whole big picture of literacy mm-hmm. and what our culture needs to improve. Mm-hmm. I would venture to say that if any of your listeners are college freshmen mm-hmm. here at Parkside, I'm wondering, you know, do they feel like they fall into that 70%
yeah.
of being college literacy ready?
Yeah, right, right. How about the students that come in to Mrs. Meyer's Reading Room? How are they? I mean, you have a little bit of an, I don't want to, maybe advantage is the wrong word, but because of the fact that you're dealing with students more on a one-to-one basis, individual instruction, is that fair to say or
no?
Not?
Our classes are small group. We have up to 7 students in a class at a time.
Okay.
But here's what we do. Every student gets a test when they come in. So we know where they are functioning mm-hmm. In a reading and comprehension level. And we can set the curriculum for that class based on the individual needs of each student mm-hmm. in that class. Mm-hmm. And because we are doing small group instruction, then it's very easy for the teacher to get to know the students, mm-hmm. to know how quickly they can push them through the curriculum mm-hmm. and advance them through that curriculum so that they're building skill and confidence along the way. And so I would say yes, in a way, it is easier for us because we have small group classes.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's still group dynamic. We're not working one-on-one with these students.
Yeah. Reading is such a foundation of learning, right? That mm-hmm. without that ability to comprehend, whether it's something off a digital, you know, a screen or something, a printed page, the student is really at a disadvantage if they can't read quickly and comprehend what they're reading, right?
Mm-hmm. I believe that there's so much pressure on teachers to get through curriculum,
mm-hmm.
grade level curriculum. You know, they pace through these core curriculum components, and teachers are phenomenal. I mean, I think every one of the teachers should wear a cape because not only do they have to push through this curriculum at the grade levels, they also have to differentiate for the students that learn differently or, mm-hmm. you know, learn at a slower pace or at different levels.
Mm-hmm.
And there are teachers out there that do it seamlessly. You watch it, and I can sit in classrooms and just be in awe of teachers doing this in a 30-student classroom.
Yeah.
At the same time, just because you're good at presenting those components and that way doesn't mean the students are comprehending and mm-hmm. then able to immediately apply that skill at mm-hmm. the level in which you gave the instruction.
Right.
So, you know, that's one of the reasons why we're so dependent on standardized testing, because then that is supposed to give us an idea of what's supposed to be retaught.
Yeah.
And how we're supposed to divide or differentiate our classes for these skills. But if the student's not engaged and the mm-hmm. student's not comprehending, you know, a teacher could stand on their head and wave yeah. a magic wand and it's not going to happen.
Right.
So figuring out how to reach those students that are disconnected because they're so far behind,
mm-hmm.
they have trauma in their life, they are disadvantaged and came into the classroom way behind,
mm-hmm.
Or they have a learning need that is interfering with learning.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult, you know, for our teachers to reach that many students.
Yeah. Wow. Really interesting conversation today with Tammy Myers, president of Mrs. Myers Reading Room. And Tammy, what do you see with parents, family members, how do they identify that maybe a child has a reading disability? How soon can someone say, you know what, I think that this student, this child needs help?
Two ways. If a child is, there's a lot of research out now with phonemic awareness. That's where when you're young, you start learning that sounds are matched to letters. And then letters make sounds. And then letters together make words. It's called phonemic awareness. If you have a child that is unable to memorize their alphabet, like at 4 or 5 years old, they don't know very many letters. They can't imitate sounds correctly. That is a precursor for I don't want to say a reading disorder, but a difficulty in learning to read.
Okay.
Because a lot of times when we can support these students and get them over these initial components of struggle, you don't see them struggle in second, third, and fourth grade. But it's when they're struggling at a young age, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old, and they're not able to recall all of their letter names and then their letter sounds, then, and they don't receive the help they need at that point, we're seeing them come in second, third, and fourth grade still reading at a first grade level. And yes, they can get caught up. We see it every day, but it takes a long time. Sometimes it'll take us a year and a half.
Wow. So harder, much more challenging to catch up than to be able to identify that early and get the student up to speed.
Absolutely. Children that have speech sound disorders where they're very difficult to understand. Let's say, you know, you have a 3 or 4 year old child where you only understand, you know, 1 out of every 5 words or, you know, 2 out of every 5 words. Or if you know the context, you can figure out what they're saying, or only mom and dad understand them. Nobody else does. We all know those kiddos, and they're cute. You know, a lot of times it's cute to hear them talk because you're just amazed that they look like they're talking, but you can't understand what they're saying. Those children are at highest risk for reading disorders. And that's one of the things that I would love for parents to take away today, is that if your child is struggling with a speech sound disorder, that should be your red flag to start literacy-based programs as soon as possible.
Okay. And is that kind of what maybe parents, maybe they just don't know that, you know, they haven't been, someone hasn't been, I don't want to say, they just haven't seen that before in a child, or they're new parents and not sure how they should, you know, what services are out there, what options are out there for them.
I think you're right, John. Also, it's fairly new research, like within the last decade. So our pediatricians are not current on the research. And the research-based approaches now with the component with literacy and speech sound disorders. Also, you know, our teachers are not prepared for this as well. A lot of times you have teachers that will refer students for speech therapy because they have a sound disorder and not realize that they're also struggling in the classroom because they're not able to remember the sounds that they're supposed to be saying with the letters. So it's an education process across the board. Professionals and parents need to be more aware of the research that is the foundation for that awareness.
And when you're working with a child, can you see, like, is there a point sometimes where you just go, yep, they got it. I get it. And then they're at it, or is it a slower process as they gain more confidence in their ability to read?
You know, I think every child is different, and I can tell you we celebrate a lot at Mrs. Meyer's Reading Room because we do see a lot of those light bulbs come on and the bright eyes, and a student will read something and not even realize they read it, and then they'll look at you like, did that come out of my mouth?
Interesting.
I had a little boy come in a while back, and his eyes were all red, and I could kind of tell he had been crying, and I thought, know, this is one of my little guys that was kind of a troublemaker. That was his MO was, you know, I'll get in trouble so then I don't have to perform.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of suspected that, but his mom came in all happy. She was just smiling ear to ear and kind of laughing at him. And I sort of felt sorry for him in the moment. And she said, oh, no, 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 you're not going to believe this. I said, okay, you have to tell me.
Yeah.
So she said, we're driving here, and he couldn't wait to get here because it was a reading room day. And I see him with his hands over his eyes. And I said, what are you doing? And he said, I can't make it stop. And she said, what are you trying to make it stop? He said, all those words. I'm reading all those words. So he was reading all the signs, the billboards and the street signs and the names of stores as they were driving. And he said, I can't make it stop.
Oh, man. Yeah, because he wanted to keep reading.
Well, and his brain kept reading automatically, just like you and I do.
Yeah.
We don't focus on how to sound out every word we see. Our brain just reads.
Mm-hmm.
And his brain started doing that.
Wow.
So he went from phonics and decoding, sounding out all the words, and then encoding, blending them together, to his brain assimilating the information into contextual knowledge. So he, all of a sudden, he could read. Right?
Yeah.
And it shocked him and it scared him because he couldn't stop it.
Wow. Wow. That's interesting. And I've got to believe that you have numerous stories or students that come back at some point and are, you know, appreciative of what the increased ability to read, comprehend, what that has done for them in terms of their ability to learn.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We have one student that came in not too long ago with his MAP scores, and he went from the the measure of academic progress lot of the public schools are using to determine how students are growing academically, and they measure these students three times a year, and he brought his fall MAP score in, and his MAP score had been the lowest in his class, and he knew it. He knew he was struggling.
Yeah,
but he brought his MAP score in because it was now the highest.
Wow.
In his class.
Wow, wow.
So no, I mean he was beaming, and he ran in and he showed us. I mean he had it in his hand. He couldn't wait to show us.
Yeah,
and then his mom followed him in, and you would have thought she was floating on a magic carpet.
Wow.
She was just like, she was definitely the hero for bringing him to us and getting it done.
Yeah. Yeah. What sort of, now you're, Mrs. Meyer's reading room here in the Racine Kenosha area is located in Summers, correct?
No, it's actually in Mount Pleasant.
In Mount Pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's, right across the street from the Texas Roadhouse on Durand Avenue.
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We're in the office buildings right there. Two doors down from the Walgreens.
Okay. And how do people find out about the fact that your Mrs. Meyer's reading room is there, and what some of the opportunities might be? How do they find out about that?
Well, we've actually tried to track this a little bit. I mean, I love this organization and I love this team, but my first business is not business. You know, my first business is a speech pathologist and taking care of children and their families.
Mm-hmm.
And so it took me a little bit to learn how to track the marketing piece. And so we're doing that better now.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a Facebook page, but we've found that we send out class passes through backpack mail to schools.
Mm, okay.
Word of mouth is huge. For us, parents talk to parents, to parents.
Yeah.
We have some really good relationships with schools, but also pediatricians, because parents will talk to their doctors about their children's struggle in school.
Sure.
So we have several pediatricians that highly support our program because they've seen the change in their children that they serve.
Yeah.
So we don't do a lot of advertising. We just have found that we offer a good service, and we care about children and families, and they do a lot of it for us, word of mouth.
Sure. And as far as your the families that that come in and take advantage of the opportunities that you have, pretty wide geographic area that they're coming from, or mostly Racine Kenosha area, or
I would say it's a wide geographic. We have some people coming in from Illinois. We have people coming in from Milwaukee and out in like closer to Waukesha County. Definitely there are some in Western Kenosha that come in. I mean, they have a pretty decent drive.
Sure.
So the majority, obviously, I think, is in the Kenosha, Racine, Mount Pleasant metropolitan areas. But we do have families that drive in.
Excellent. We're chatting with Tammy Myers, president of Mrs. Myers Reading Room, and a really interesting conversation about just what reading means to a young person, to a child's ability to learn. And when you look at when students come in, how challenging is it for you and your staff to determine, you know, is it easy or hard to determine maybe what they need or what it is that's preventing them from reading or making it a challenge for them?
Well, we do the pretest with all of the students as they come in. So we know where their functional reading level is at the word level for fluency.
Mm-hmm.
And those words are in a hierarchy of not just complexity, but also frequency of literature. So we're able to assess where a student should begin their learning process. Okay. Once we are able to do that, we will use high frequency words that are found in children's literature. It's actually research that has been done out of California with Rebecca Sitton. It's been around a long time.
Okay.
And we use those words, that vocabulary. And then we progress with a hierarchy of skills. And we rotate through those skills. So we break reading down to very small levels. And that's how we introduce it to the students. And then we play games with those levels. For example, phonemic awareness. So we will play games with letters and sounds and letters and sounds. Then we'll do phonemic segmentation. So we break letters apart and we play those games, and we do that several times, and we build upon that through this hierarchy. And then when we're to the end, we just start over and raise the complexity. So it's a rotation of presentation, increasing complexity as we go. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all the students, I mean, they learn what we're doing, but really what they remember is how they used it and how much fun it was and what they got to take home.
Interesting. And people, if someone listens to this show all the time, I don't know if there are people who listen all the time, but if they do, they know that that my gauge for how much fun and interesting was the conversation is when I glance over to see where we are with time for the show, and the time is just flying by. And today the time has just flown by. So for Tammy, Tammy Myers, president of Mrs. Myers Reading Room, first off, I thank you for taking time to come in and share some of what you do at Mrs. Myers Reading Room and the importance of reading for children being able to learn. And tell us how, if someone's listening to this and they're interested in getting in touch with you, how can they do that?
Oh, thank you, John. I appreciate it. And thank you for having me today. I could talk about this and I didn't even keep up with the time. So our phone number is 262-456-2384. And our website is mrsmyersrr.com. Okay. So it's Mrs. Myers,
onerr.com. Great. Well, Tammy, thank you very much. We've been talking with Tammy Myers, president of Mrs. Myers Reading Room. You've been listening to Parkside Today. I'm John Melke, and to hear past editions of Parkside Today, please go to uwp.edu/parksidetoday. Thanks for listening, everybody.